Tonight, we are in the book of Proverbs. Love the book of Proverbs. Why don't we turn in our Bibles to Proverbs chapter 9. Proverbs 9, of course, we just left off in chapter 8 last week. But Proverbs 9 is actually a division of a study of two women. Actually, what Solomon has done is compared wisdom and foolishness to two types of women that people seem to be attracted to. And what we want to condition ourselves into being is men attracted to wisdom, or people attracted to wisdom as opposed to folly or foolishness. And so that's the division of this chapter and what it talks about. In verse 1, wisdom has built her house. Notice it refers to her, to wisdom as a her. Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn out her seven pillars. A lot of debate over the significance of the seven pillars, and a lot of people aren't sure, to be honest with you. I am not sure. However, I can tell you that seven does represent perfection. And the idea is some believe that Solomon was thinking of the temple that he built. He built the temple for God, and maybe he was thinking of that the temple had seven pillars that seems to have rooted it in the physical realm so that people can be rooted in the spiritual realm. No one really knows for sure what it is speaking about. However, we know that it could simply be a picture that Solomon is giving to us, and that there are many of them. There are just many foundations to wisdom that support the things we gather and glean from pursuing wisdom. So wisdom is prepared, and it goes on talking about her preparation, that she has slaughtered her meat upon the altar perhaps. She has mixed her wine. She has also furnished her table. So she's completely prepared to be ready to feast. And perhaps the feasting is upon the knowledge of God or the word of God. She has sent out her maidens. She cries out from the highest places of the city. And here we see the crying out perhaps of those who bring the gospel, bringing the gospel of good news to people who need to hear it. And here is the cry of the maidens, the cry of the gospel. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. As for him who lacks understanding, she says to him, come and eat of my bread and drink of the wine I have mixed. Forsake foolishness and live, and go in the way of understanding. And so the call of the gospel, it reminded me actually in Luke chapter 14, where Jesus was giving the parable of the wedding feast, and he sent out invitations to the nobles of the city, and the nobles all had reasons or excuses for why they couldn't come to this great wedding feast. And so father of the bride was so disappointed and upset, he sent out his servants into the highways and into the byways and called everyone to come, for the wedding feast is ready. And so he sent them out to everywhere. And whoever would hear, whoever would answer this call, heed the call of God, was welcome into the wedding feast. And this sounds very much like the gospel. I mean, that was Matthew 22, not Luke 14. Jesus calling people to come to the great wedding feast of the Lord. Everything is ready, he says. Come and eat of my bread, eat of my wine. The bread and the wine, significant perhaps, the body and blood of Christ. Forsake foolishness and live, and go in the way of understanding. You know, this is something we're going to cover in a little bit, and when we talk about the fool. So often what happens, the fool of Proverbs refuses to forsake the way of foolishness. He holds on to the way of foolishness and therefore is never able to understand the things of the Lord. And that's an unfortunate thing. And so what's the wise choice? Obviously, let go of foolishness. Let go of foolish thinking. Let go of the foolish way of sin and repent and turn your life over to the Lord. In verse 7, he who corrects a scoffer gets shame for himself, or will be mocked himself, will receive a stain upon his own character. And he who rebukes a wicked man only harms himself. And so, obviously, there is a place for correction, but there are certain times when you just be best served just to leave the fellow alone, leave the person alone. Certain people are just not going to turn, even though you may say all of the right things. Do not correct the scoffer, lest he hate you, but rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be still wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. So here is the secret, really, to being wise, and that is to always remain teachable. Always remain teachable. I don't know how you fancy yourself. I hope you don't fancy yourself as someone who just doesn't want to learn, who doesn't want to ever admit that possibly you have more to learn, or perhaps you have a difficulty confessing that you've done something wrong or that you need to receive more insight from someone. Maybe you never like to admit that you're wrong. Well, this may be a word of encouragement to you. It's important to admit that we need some more education, some more training, some teaching, some learning. And if we're wrong, we should be willing to say, you know, I was wrong, and I want to learn from this. Tell me more. How can I become better at this? How can I be a better person? What would make me more godly? What would help me to overcome that bad temper of mine? What would help me to turn away from this bad mouth of mine? Is there a positive approach to my bad habits, or am I bound to be trapped in these things all the time? Well, I'd have to say, in the Lord, no, we're not bound to these things. We can always grow in wisdom if we are willing to learn. We have to be teachable. And speaking of that, verse 10 is an excellent verse, a key to the whole of Proverbs. We've already sort of covered it in chapter 1, but now he says it again. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Now, once again, you probably know, if you're anywhere near me for a time, you know that I really love words, the words of the original language. Different wording here. Let me read another verse for you from Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Now, the fear of the Lord is the beginning, and here the fear of the Lord is the beginning. In English, it sounds exactly the same. However, in Hebrew, the word beginning is two different words. In verse 7 of chapter 1, the fear of the Lord is the resheth, is the word in Hebrew. And the word really means the sum total of every ounce of knowledge that you accumulate. The sum total of it all tells you that the fear of the Lord is where all knowledge comes together. That's where it all hinges upon, in a sense. Whereas here in verse 10 of chapter 9, the fear of the Lord, and here the word beginning is tekelah. And the word tekelah in the Hebrew is a word which actually means the first step. Think about it now. Very important little difference and something worth pointing out. The fear of the Lord is the first step toward being a wise person. The first step of wisdom. If you miss that very important part, to fear the Lord, well, you can just give up on wisdom altogether because you're just not going to find it. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Now, another contrast here in chapter 1 and verse 7, it says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Here is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Now, you take this word and you see it and you realize that knowing God is where discernment is found. Knowing God is where all understanding comes in. You realize this and compare it to 1 Corinthians chapter 2. You remember that verse. The natural man, in verse 14 of chapter 2, the natural man does not receive the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him, nor can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. But he who is spiritual judges all things, yet he himself is rightly judged by no one. So in order for us to understand spiritual things, you have to come to the very first step. And the first step is to fear the Lord in a proper way, to know the Lord, to understand that he is the creator of all things, the creator of the universe, and grow in your knowledge of the Lord. It's not enough to fear the Lord, but want to know him. Imagine knowing someone that you fear. Obviously, we're not talking about afraid of him, but the respect of him. Because I respect him, I want to know him, and he wants us to know him. He wants us to know him as we as he knows us. And so we come to the Lord, we grow in our knowledge of him, and we obtain discernment. That's where understanding is found. Now, continuing this thought about wisdom being a woman, for by me, wisdom, your days will be multiplied, and years of life will be added to you. If you are wise, you are wise for yourself. It helps you. And if you're a scoffer, well, you're on your own. That's sort of what it's saying. Scoffers, well, it's to your own harm that you would scoff. And so it would be best for you to pursue the Lord and thus pursue wisdom. And now we're introduced to the other woman of Proverbs 9, and that is the foolish woman. In verse 13, a foolish woman is clamorous and or loud. She is simple and knows nothing. Wisdom from above is peaceable and pure, James tells us. Well, wisdom from beneath is loud, clamorous, and stubborn. It will not yield. And so here is the contrast to the wisdom that James talks about in his book. The foolish woman, and obviously we are talking about wisdom rather than really a woman. So don't be offended in any way, women, because I really believe the contrast is a foolish person to a wise person. And here, what foolishness does is like a woman that is immoral, you may say. She's calling, foolishness calls to men and women alike and says, come this way, come this way. A foolish woman is loud, and she's simple and knows nothing. But she pretends to know something, and that's the thing. For she sits at the door of her house on a seat by the highest places of the city, and this is often a ruse in that she sits in the seat of the city or the places of authority in the city, pretending to be wise when in reality this foolishness is obviously not wise. Verse 15, to call to those who pass by, she sits on her throne in the city, to call to those who pass by who go straight on their way. In other words, they're minding their own business, they're right-minded, they're heading in the right way, and whoever is simple, let him turn in here, she says. And as for him who lacks understanding, she says to him, oh, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant, isn't it? You think about it. Things done that are forbidden, forbidden things, are often very exciting to be involved in, very fun, very pleasurable, until the hook is set, and then you become a prisoner. Notice, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant, but he does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of hell. And so there is the baited hook. It's covered with pleasure. It's covered with sinful enjoyments, but they lead only to death and to hell. And so the two women calling out to the mind of man, or the two men, if you will, calling out to the women, the mind of women, you can look at it either way. The reality is it's foolishness versus wisdom, and we choose wisdom. At least we're supposed to. Proverbs chapter 10, the Proverbs of Solomon, a wise son makes glad a father, but a foolish son is the grief of his mother. Sorry, I didn't write it. I only read it. I'm sure there's good reason for that, and I'm sure you can make it up as you go along. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivers from death. The Lord will not allow the righteous soul to famish, but he casts away the desire of the wicked. And you know, Proverbs in verses 4 and 5, Proverbs talks an awful lot about the lazy man. And so in verse 4 he says, he who has a slack hand becomes poor. And he's talking about, we use the word slackered, a slack hand or a slackered, a lazy person. He who is lazy becomes poor, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. A diligent is one who stays at the task, keeps working at it, keeps moving for it. He will get rich or take care of his need. His need will be taken care of. He who gathers in summer is a wise son. He who sleeps in the harvest is a son who causes shame. And so, again, the contrast between wisdom and foolishness. A wise person gathers when he's supposed to gather. He He plows the fields when he's supposed to plow the field, waters and weeds when he's supposed to, so that there will be enough at harvest time to be collected. And so the foolish one sleeps through those things. Blessing, and obviously you could put this into your own life. A slackard is someone who doesn't mind procrastinating. Procrastination is really a tough one for us all. I think all of us would love to kind of put things aside till tomorrow. You know, the saying, don't put off till tomorrow what you can do today. It's something that I actually have trained myself to some degree to live by as much as I am able. There are times when a nice nap really calls out to you. But let's face it, if you're napping more than you're diligent, then you're going to eventually pay for that. You'll pay the fiddler. We have to, the only rescuer for this, the only remedy for this type of slackered mindset is a disciplined mind, is discipline. To stand up and say, no, I will not do the thing that my body wants to do, which is to take a nap or to put off till tomorrow. Instead, I will discipline myself and get up and go. And the Lord wants us to be that kind of person, which is good news, because that means He will then empower us by His Spirit to overcome that type of a weakness. I do believe procrastination is a weakness in a person's life, and God wants to rescue us from that weakness. Now, careful, I say weakness, not sin. I'm talking about a weakness, and we want to make sure that we can get bolstered in that by the help of the Lord. Blessings are on the head of the righteous, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. The memory of the righteous is blessed, but the name of the wicked will rot. That's interesting. People remember good people. The wise in heart will receive commands, but a prating fool will fall. He who walks with integrity walks securely or surely. And the word integrity there is honesty. It speaks of honesty. An honest person, a person whose words mean what he says, he walks securely. But he who perverts his ways will become known. He will be known for his deception. He will be known for his dishonesty or lack of integrity. And you have to ask yourself the question, what's important to you? When you think about reputation, what sort of reputation do you wish to have for your own life, for your own person? What sort of reputation do you want? Do you want to be someone who's known as honest or dishonest? A person of integrity or one who lacks integrity? These are things you have to determine for yourself and say, I want to be a person who is considered honest. And the only way that can be is to be honest and to live in integrity. But he who winks with the eye causes trouble, but a prating fool will fall. There it says it again, a prating fool. Someone who boasts about his folly will ultimately reap the reward of it. The mouth of the righteous is a well of life, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. And the mouth of the righteous person is a well of life, or an oasis, a well of life. Everything around them may be a desert, but not this righteous person. A righteous person, from out of his heart flows righteous things and produces life to those who hear it. The idea, of course, is the watering hole. You think of the watering hole where people will be able to come and find refreshment. That's the kind of words that the righteous person wants to be able to give out in his life. Once again, we have the power to change if we're not that type of a person. We want to be this type of a person. And so Proverbs establishes for us a standard to shoot for. I want to be like that, as opposed to the wicked person who, wherever he goes, is death and violence. Verse 12, hatred stirs up strife, but love covers sins. And we should turn to chapter 19 real quick. And chapter 17 and verse 9, it kind of goes along with this nicely. He who covers a transgression seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates friends. And obviously we're talking about gossipers, people who just repeat a matter, even if the matter is true. There's certain matters that you just don't repeat. Someone gets promoted, well, maybe you could repeat that. But if someone gets demoted and insulted and embarrassed, why would you want to repeat that unless you're hoping to hurt someone in doing so? And so, if it creates strife, it's an act of hatred, even though you thought it was a good idea at the time. But rather, love covers, hides, protects. That's the idea. Love will protect a person who has fallen. Love will try to protect a person who has bad news in their life. Love will not repeat it to other people lest they create division and strife or hatred. That's what hatred does. And so this is a contrast between love and hatred. Love and hate. Do you love someone? Then you treat them kindly. If you hate someone, then you would do bad toward them, and that's not the way you want to do it. Wisdom is found on the lips of him who has understanding, but a rod is for the back of him who is devoid of understanding. Now, interesting, you have two different words for understanding in the same verse. In verse 13, the first word there, wisdom is found on the lips of him who has understanding. The word in the Hebrew is bien, and that word means discernment. This is a person with discernment. Wisdom is found on the lips of him who has discernment. In other words, if he has discernment, it's because he's a wise person. But then the other word for one who is devoid of understanding, the word is leb in the Hebrew. And it means he is devoid of an inner person. He's devoid of that which is a real part of the man, the heart, the soul, the mind, and the will. He doesn't have a real conviction in his life. And so the rod is for one who has no conviction. He has no concern over right or wrong, no conscience over right or wrong. Whereas a wise person has discernment. The foolish person has no heart, has no heart at all. Wise people store up knowledge, but the mouth of the foolish is near destruction. So education, knowledge, growing in what you know, and in the Christian faith, it's who you know, knowing Christ, that is. The rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty. Now, this is not a good thing. The rich man's wealth is his strong city, which means he puts his confidence in his wealth. And that's not a wise thing. Chapter 11, verse 28, kind of repeats it. He who trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like foliage. It's a wonderful time of year, is it not? All of the trees are glistening with their new growth, and they look so beautiful. It's a great time of year. Jerry and I were looking out today, looking out at our forest, and she says, I just love this time of year. Everything's so beautiful, so green. That's the idea behind a wise person, the one who doesn't trust in his riches necessarily. He trusts instead in the Lord, and that's what makes him a righteous person. Here in verse 15, the righteous man is a fool for placing his trust or his confidence in his wealth. That's not where a person runs to. That's the idea between a strong city. It means a fortified city. The rich man believes that his wealth is a fortified city, and he's often very much disappointed when he realizes you can't buy the things that you think you can. The labor of the righteous lead to life, but the wages of the wicked to sin. Wages of death, of course. Wages of sin is death. He who keeps instruction is in the way of life, but he who refuses correction goes astray. The word instruction there is another word can be used. Another word for that is correction in the Hebrew. He who keeps instruction or correction or hears it and receives it, receives correction, is on the pathway toward life. Again, are you a person that does not want to admit that you're wrong? Then take heed to this. This is the way of life, to be able to say, oh, I was wrong, I need to be corrected. Thank you for correcting me. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. But if you refuse correction, eventually you'll get off the path that you're supposed to be on. You'll be led astray. You'll go in the wrong direction. That's why correction's important. And proper correction should be done with a motive of love. People who love you, people who care for you should feel free to correct you. And it's okay to say, I'm wrong. You should be loved enough and sense that you're being loved enough that someone who corrects you is doing it for a good reason. Whoever hides hatred has lying lips. Whoever spreads slander is a fool. We've talked about that. In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise. I don't know about you, I have this verse underlined in my Bible. It says very simply, don't talk too much. That's what it says. The more you talk, the more opportunity you're going to have for making a fool of yourself. The more you talk, the less, the more opportunity there is for sinning. In the multitude of words, in a lot of words, you're going to have a lot of sin. That's the idea. So watch what you say. But if you can refrain from saying what you wish, there's wisdom in that. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is worth very little. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for lack of wisdom. Wow. The blessing of the Lord makes one rich, and he adds no sorrow with it. Now, how would you want to interpret that? The blessing of the Lord makes one rich. Out of curiosity, I wonder how many of us instantly went to the bank accounts. Oh, the Lord wants to bless me and make me wealthy, financially rich. You know, there are some well-intentioned Christian people who believe that the Lord wants you to be millionaires and wealthy and rich and driving Lexus and Mercedes and Cadillacs. There are a lot of people who do believe this. And if you had enough faith or the proper kind of faith, and especially if you gave to our ministries, you would be blessed with much, much more. And that's how a lot of people view it. Give us money and the Lord will bless you back. Unfortunately, the one who receives the money is the one who's been blessed, it seems, in that case. I don't think the Lord is necessarily talking about financial blessing. I don't believe he's excluding it either. I do believe that the blessing of the Lord makes one rich. And when the Lord chooses to bless us, he blesses us in more ways than what our minds limit ourselves to. Because we sometimes only limit ourselves to financial blessing. Remember the story of Solomon. When God asks Solomon, what would you have me to do for you? I'll give you anything you desire. And Solomon said, I want wisdom to rule your people. And the Lord said, you know, you could have asked for anything. You could have asked for riches. You could have asked for full barns. You could have asked for peace from your enemies. You could have asked for any of that. But instead, you asked for wisdom in order to rule my people. Because you've asked for that, I'm going to give you everything else besides. That's a wonderful approach. So often we think strictly materialistically. We think just of the money. But God's blessings go far beyond the things that we can get monetarily. And it doesn't bother me at all if he cares to throw monetary blessings our way either. And shouldn't. To do evil is like sport to a fool. But a man of understanding has wisdom. The fear of the wicked will come upon him. And the desire of the righteous will be granted. When the whirlwind passes by, the wicked is no more. But the righteous has an everlasting foundation. And so, you know, we're going to get into this even a little more in this later on in this proverb. I'll save it for when we get there. Verse 26, as vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the lazy man to those who sent him, or to his employer, the ones who've employed him. He's like vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes. In other words, an irritant. Vinegar to the teeth, you know, makes your teeth sensitive. Smoke in the eyes burns your eyes. And so it's like, a lazy person always makes the boss pucker and cry. His eyes water. You know, you see the poor guy. Don't make me have to send this guy out again. I'll never get the job done. Boy, you sure don't want to be that kind of an employee. As a Christian, you are supposed to give your boss exactly what he expects to give you. That's what you expect. In fact, it may be best to give him even more than what he is paying you for. And I don't think it's good to waste the boss's time or money. As a Christian, you must be a good witness on the job. It's so very important. And that includes your cell phone usage. You know, if you're supposed to be getting paid and you're not supposed to be getting paid to be on the cell phone, then get off the cell phone, turn it off, leave it at home. If you're too tempted to answer it, it shouldn't be on. You know, I used to have this kid that worked for us out at the castle. And you know, I always knew when he was working because he always had his backpack on and his earphones in listening to some Bible study tape or something. And I knew that he thought himself to be spiritual in his backpack. He always had his Bible and a book that he was reading for the Lord. And we had this class called M199, and M199 was the servant class. And what that meant is that during that time, you are scheduled to work 3 hours of your day, maybe four, depending, and you're supposed to dedicate that time to serving the Lord. And I was always on him because he said, but I'm listening to, I don't care what you're doing. Get those things out of your ear, put the Bible away, and get to work. And that really bothered him because he thought that, you know, oh, this isn't a spiritual place. And I said, well, it's most certainly a spiritual place, and you're learning a very spiritual lesson. That's what you're expected to do. Now put that stuff down. You read your Bible on your own time, and you listen to your tapes on your own time. This time belongs to the Lord and to me, and I'm the Lord's responsible party here, so get busy. Ooh, that bothered him, but he learned his lesson. Today, he's the pastor of the church in Majorca, and he runs his own M199 classes. That's what I like to hear. That's a good story. Beautiful thing. But that's the reality is you don't want to, if you're doing that sort of thing, you're only going to do the job part way, and it's not fair to your employer. If you're doing the job part way, it's just not fair. So the fear of the Lord prolongs days, verse 27. But the years of the wicked will be shortened. The hope of the righteous will be gladness, but the expectation of the wicked will perish. Now, what does this mean? Verse 27, the fear of the Lord prolongs days. What does that mean? Does that mean you're going to live long on the earth? And, you know, what is it saying here? That the years of the wicked will be shortened. They're going to die sooner. Well, I don't know about you. I've seen quite the opposite. You know, what about the song? Why do the good die young? You know, there's some truth in some of that. It seems sometimes the good die young. Why does that happen? I don't think that's necessarily the way we should look at this because it doesn't always work that way. I think we're talking about eternal life. There has to be something eternal that is being referred to here to some degree. Notice the expectation of the wicked will perish. The years of the wicked will be shortened, and the hope of the righteous, in verse 28, will be gladness. And what is our hope? The hope of eternal life, the hope of eternal glory with Christ. And that's what we look forward to. In verse 29, the way of the Lord is strength for the upright, but destruction will come to the workers of iniquity. The righteous will never be removed, but the wicked will not inherit the earth. Chapter 11. Dishonest scales are an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. Now, cheaters is what's at issue here. The Lord despises cheaters. Now remember, we talked about this last week in chapter 6, that there are certain things, there were six things, yea, seven things are an abomination to the Lord, the things the Lord hates. Well, listen, anytime you see that this is an abomination, you really need to look at it and pay attention to it. God despises cheaters and dishonest people, hates them. And so, if that's you, stop it and repent. It's as simple as that. We don't want to be in this category at all. Verse 2, when pride comes, then comes shame or disgrace. But with the humble, there is wisdom. Here's integrity again in verse 3. The integrity of the upright will guide them, but the perversity or the dishonesty of the unfaithful will destroy him. So honesty will guide one straight. Dishonesty will lead him to destruction. The same with the pride. Pride comes disgrace, destruction. Riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. What are we talking about here? Riches do not profit on the day of judgment. When we stand before the Lord on judgment day, you're not going to be able to say, but Lord, my 401ks are out the roof. I have so much money. And the Lord will say, your money will perish with you. It has no place here. But righteousness, on the other hand, well, now that spends pretty good in heaven because the wealth that you obtain on this earth monetarily does not spend in heaven unless you use the wealth and give it to the Lord for his work. That's how you spend that money or add it up for righteousness in eternity. Verse 5, the righteous of the blameless, righteousness of the blameless will direct his way aright, or a strifeless life is what's at stake here, or what is at issue. The righteous will live a relatively strifeless life in comparison to the ungodly. The wicked will fall by his own wickedness. He will experience the strife and destruction. Verse 6, the righteousness of the upright will deliver them, but the unfaithful will be caught by their lusts. So again, the godly will be delivered by his way of life. The unfaithful will be delivered, or will be caught up by his way of life. And we're talking not about salvation here. We're talking about the traps. And perhaps that may be what it means there in verse 27 as well of chapter 10. The fear of the Lord prolongs days. In other words, as you're walking in fear of the Lord, you're walking rightly. You're walking aright where you're supposed to be. You're going to avoid much more trouble that way. Here's what he's saying. The righteous will really be delivered from bad because he won't even be in those places. Whereas the unfaithful or the godless person will be caught by his own lusts and his own traps and his own wickedness. He'll be consumed by it. When a wicked man dies, his expectation will perish, and the hope of the unjust perishes. Meaning, his potential will never have been reached at that point, obviously. The righteous is delivered from trouble, and it comes to the wicked instead. The righteous will be delivered out of trouble by his way of life, and the Lord will protect him in it, and yet he will allow trouble to come to those who are walking in a wicked way. God has no obligation to protect the wicked. Listen to this. God has no obligation to protect the wicked in their way of life. None whatsoever. He has an obligation to protect his children, and that he will do. He has no obligation to protect the wicked at all. And so he allows harm to come to them. It's interesting how so often you hear people say, well, why does a God of love allow blah, 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 blah? And they go on and they say, there's no obligation for God to prevent blah, 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 blah from happening. There's no obligation. The wickedness of this world deserves worse than that. But God in his grace has withheld judgment. Judgment's coming. And then it's going to make all consequences of righteousness versus wickedness look like nothing. Judgment is coming. And in that day, then you'll see the weeping and the wailing and the gnashing of teeth. Right now, we just don't like the inconvenience of trouble and suffering. And we experience a lot of it in our world. Verse 9, the hypocrite with his mouth destroys his neighbor or his friend. But through knowledge, the righteous will be delivered. Let's jump down to verse 14. Where there is no counsel, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. This is talking about the leadership of a people, of a nation. For the most part, it does apply, obviously, and may certainly apply to our own personal lives. But where there is no wise leadership is a way of putting it, the people will ultimately fall into the pit with their leaders, the blind leading the blind. But in the multitude of advisors, with many advisors, there is safety. And that's good to have, and is to have people with different expertises to be able to add to the wisdom of the pot, so to speak. He who is surety for a stranger will suffer, but one who hates being surety is safe. That's the safest way to go. Surety is someone who co-signs, loans money in a sense. A gracious woman retains honor or respect and riches in some translations, but ruthless men will just get their riches, not respect. The merciful man does good for his own soul, but he who is cruel troubles his own soul or his own flesh. The wicked man does deceptive work, but he who sows righteousness will have a sure reward. As righteousness leads to life, so is he who pursues evil, pursues it to his own death. So the sowing of righteousness, the throwing out of seeds, righteous seeds, good seeds that the Lord would have us to sow in the world as we walk the world And he's saying, by doing so, you're going to be safe, or you will receive good reward by that. Those in verse 20, those who are of a perverse heart are an abomination to the Lord. Here is another one, an abomination. What is a perverse heart? The word is ikesh, and the word means twisted, perverted is what it's talking about. And this funny Hebrew word, ikesh, sort of like icky. Someone with an icky heart, someone with a twisted, perverted, icky heart is an abomination to the Lord. And I think there is a list of perverted people that we could put on there, and I'm not talking names, I'm talking activities that can go on the Lord's despised list. But the blameless in their ways are his delight. The blameless meaning the innocent, those pure of heart, they are the delight of the Lord. Verse 22, we read on Sunday, as a ring of gold in a pig's snout, so is a lovely woman who lacks wisdom or discretion. And so, speaking of inner beauty from 1 Peter 3, verses 3 through 4, let your beauty be from the inside rather than that which is adorning the outside. The desire of the righteous is only good, but the expectation of the wicked is wrath. In other words, if you're the righteous, your desires will be reached, but if you're a wicked person, you should expect only wrath to come your way eventually. Verse 24, there is one who scatters, yet increases more, and there is one who withholds more than is right, but it leads to poverty. This is an important New Testament principle of sowing and reaping. One who sows generously will reap from the Lord generously. One who sows sparingly, miserly, will then reap from the Lord the same. And so to be generous with what God has given you is a good thing. In verse 25, the generous soul will be made rich, and he who waters will also be watered himself. And so, in a sense, you do have to be delivered from the bondage of your own material possessions in order to experience this type of a blessing. Verse 28, we already read. Verse 29, he who troubles his own house will inherit the wind. In verse 30, the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life. And he who wins souls is wise. He who wins souls is wise. There you go. It's a good practice toward wisdom, winning souls. And if the righteous will be recompensed on the earth, how much more the ungodly and the sinner? In other words, if the righteous will be rewarded their just deserts, how about the wicked? They will also receive theirs. Chapter 12, whoever loves instruction loves knowledge. He who hates correction is stupid. I'm just reading it. I didn't write it. I'm just reading it. Chapter 12, verse 1. He who hates correction is stupid. And obviously, the theme of foolish comes up here. To hate correction is a silly approach to life. That if you are so, I'm sorry, the best word has already been used. If you are so stupid, I don't know what to say. And I'm saying this. Please understand. I'm saying this, pointing the fingers at myself as well. I have always been a very strong person. I hate to be corrected. I hate it. I love being right in everything that I do. I love winning. I don't like to have to admit that I was... Remember the old Fonz. You know, you hate to do it. But I've got to come to realize that I simply don't know everything that needs to be known. And so someone else might be able to point out a blind spot. And I believe God has given me a lot of people that like doing that in my life, to point out my blind spots. And we want to love the instruction, love it. And I don't know that I'll ever grow fond of being wrong. I don't ever want to like being wrong. But I do want to love instruction because I want to be a righteous person, not right all the time. I want to be righteous. A good man, here's why verse 2 tells you why. A good man obtains favor from the Lord. I want to be a good man. I want the Lord to look kindly upon me. But a man of wicked intentions, he will condemn that type of a person. A man is not established by wickedness, but the root of the righteous cannot be moved. And the word established there can mean stable. In other words, there's no stability in a wicked man. Don't trust him. But a righteous man is one you should be able to trust. An excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who causes shame is like rottenness in his bones. Ooh, boy. I skipped some verses tonight. I could have skipped that one, but an excellent wife is a husband's pride and joy. He's proud of his wife. He loves his wife. He cares for his wife. And it becomes an honorable thing to him. He wears her like a crown in a sense. But she who causes him shame is a real drain to him. He's a drag. Okay, I'll move on. The thoughts of the righteous are right, or the thoughts or the plans of the righteous are right. The counsels of the wicked are deceitful. The words of the wicked are lie in wait for blood, or a murderous ambush is what the New Living Translation says. But the mouth of the upright will deliver them and save their life. And so, again, a contrast to the wicked. It's what the whole good part of Proverbs is about. The wicked are overthrown and no more, but the house of the righteous will stand forever. Stand firm. A man will be commended according to his wisdom, but he who is of a perverse or warped, twisted mind, his heart will be despised. He will be despised. Better is the one who is slighted but has a servant than he who honors himself but lacks bread. Better is one who is overlooked or viewed as a nobody. That's what the word slighted means, to be kind of, treated as, with a poor reputation. But yet you have a servant working for you. That seems, he's saying that's pretty good. You're doing pretty good for yourself. Rather than one who thinks more highly of himself than he ought to, and he doesn't actually have bread to eat or to put on his table. A righteous man regards the life of his animal, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. A righteous man is humane. That's what it's talking about. A humane. He cares about animals. He cares about the life of things around him. But keep something in mind, and we must balance it out. Because there's often a lot of people who go too far. PETA is one of those cases, protection of animals. And they go a little bit too far. And the reality is this. When you read in the Old Testament, in particular the Levitical laws of God, when a man killed another man's animal, the penalty was that you were supposed to replace the man's animal. But in the law, when you killed a man, the penalty was you lost your life. The reason is because human life is more valuable than animal life. God has always seen it that way. God used animal life to atone for human life, but he also taught us that it was never sufficient to remove sins. Human life had to remove the sin of human beings. That human life that was offered was Jesus Christ. Life for life, blood for blood. And that's the reality of it. To be humane is righteousness. It's a good thing. To be out of balance and equate the value of a whale to that of an unborn child is just wacko, foolishness. And that's the reality of what God views as wise and foolish. He who tills his land will be satisfied with bread. He who follows frivolity is devoid of understanding or judgment. So work hard is what it's saying, and you won't be dissatisfied. Verse 12, the wicked covet the catch of the evil men, but the root of the righteous yields fruit. And the wicked covet their gain, they're opportunistic. The wicked, in verse 13, is ensnared by the transgression of his lips, but the righteous will come through trouble. Though he may come through it a bit singed and maybe even bruised, yet he will come through it. A man will be satisfied with good by the fruit of his mouth, and the recompense of a man's hands will be rendered to him. And so hard work will be rewarded, and that's what this section is talking about. The importance of a man who is conscientious and he has a conviction to work hard. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who needs counsel is wise. And again, counsel in this whole thing, in verse 15, a fool's wrath is known at once. A prudent man covers shame. I'll get back to that in a minute. But the righteous person, or the foolish person, believes, again, that he's right. He doesn't need to be corrected. But he who listens is wise, and that's the idea of being teachable again. A fool's wrath, or a quick-tempered person, you know it immediately. But a prudent man, a wise man, covers his shame. He stays calm. The New King James, or New Living Translation, says that he stays calm even when he's been insulted. And that is a wise man. He who speaks truth declares righteousness, but false witness deceit. There is one who speaks like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise promotes health. And so the one who speaks like the piercing of a sword, cutting words, is not wise. But the one who speaks wisdom is the one who promotes good health or proper benefits by his words. A truthful lips shall be everlasting or established forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. And this verse tells me that truth, that which is true, will hold up over time. The truth will stand the test of time, whereas a lie does not. Deceit is in the heart of those who devise evil, but counselors of peace have joy. Verse 22, another abomination. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who deal truthfully are his delight. Now, let's see. Which do I want to be? Which do you want to be? Obviously, we have the choice. Ephesians chapter 4, remember, tells us how to deal with the problem of lying. He said, speak the truth. That's the solution to lying, by speaking to truth, the truth. Prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fool proclaims foolishness. In other words, a prudent man, a wise man, doesn't boast about it, whereas a foolish man brags about himself even though he's foolish. The hand of the diligent, or the hardworking, will rule, but the lazy man will be put to forced labor. In other words, the hardworking person is free, whereas the lazy man, well, he's always going to be a slave. Anxiety in the heart of man causes depression, and we would say, no duh, but a good man makes it glad, but a good word makes it glad. It can be encouraging. And anxiety in the heart of man brings one down, weighs you down, but a good word can pick you up. The righteous should choose his friends carefully. Circle that. Underline it. Nothing needs to be said. Verse 27, the lazy man does not roast what he took in hunting. You know why? Because he never got off the couch to go hunting. That's why. The lazy man does not roast what he took in hunting, but diligence is man's precious possession. Don't put off till tomorrow what you should have done 3 weeks ago. In the way of righteousness is life, and in its pathway there is no death. Wonderful. So, again, we zip through these things, good things to put in our bonnet. Go home, find some of your favorite ones, study them a little deeper, memorize some for yourselves, apply them to your lives. But certainly this overview is just that, a zip through the scriptures. We highlight a few, talk about a few, laugh about a few, sting over a few others, and then move on, and hopefully the Lord will speak to us in our private times at home, and that's what we certainly hope for. A good thing to shoot for, obviously, is to be wise. How many of you want to be wise? I know I do. I know also, according to what we've learned, wisdom has to be worked at. It doesn't come naturally. We want to work at the wisdom that the Lord has for us and dig it up. It's here for us. Let's dig it up and go get it.